You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This week's theme, bold predictions for the 2016 season from our five NL Central beat writers. And we'll also tie up some loose ends from the final days of spring training as opening day 2016 is rapidly approaching. We kick things off this week with Pirates reporter Adam Berry.
You, I believe, are heading north from Florida on your way to Indianapolis, I believe, for one more exhibition game with the Bucks. Now, I've asked this to some of the other reporters that I've talked to, but is it kind of mixed feelings when you leave spring training? Because, yes, you're leaving the glorious weather behind, but you've been away from home for a few weeks now, more than a few weeks. Like, is it kind of a mixed bag for you?
Yeah, especially for me, because I'm actually from down here in the Tampa Bay area. So this is kind of a return trip home. Got to see some family, stuff like that. I love and miss the warm weather. But, yeah, I think I'm ready to get home, ready for the regular season routine, see my wife, see the dog, all that kind of stuff. So
reacquaint yourself with the family, that kind of thing. I get it. So
right.
A nice return trip home in the cards for you, even though temperatures await us in the 40s and the 50s, but that's April baseball. In the Northeast, we're used to it. It's part of the deal. So, Adam, let's kind of get some of your end of spring training observations, if you will, and how things might project for this Pirates team heading into the early stages of the 2016 season. We've discussed in previous weeks that, for the most part, position battles and roster spots and rotation spots are pretty much set. But is there one area, at least right now, for the first month or two of the season, that there's still a little bit of uncertainty in terms of a guy that if he falters a little bit, he could be replaced anywhere on the roster where there is just a tad of uncertainty right now for the Pirates?
I think heading north, the last spot on their bench is still uncertain, but that's going to be any number of guys. There's not really a big concern about. I'd say to keep an eye on the bullpen just because with Jared Hughes out, that kind of takes away one dimension of what was supposed to be this team's greatest strength. And it already has a very different look, I think, than most people projected coming into spring training. Corey Lubke made the bullpen. It looks like Kyle Lobstein's going to be in there. Ryan Vogelsong is there instead of Juan Nicasio, who earned a spot in the rotation. So it's a little bit of a different look, even more so without Hughes. So sort of a, you know, the ground ball specialist can get you out of a jam, or he could pitch the seventh inning if you need him to. So he has a really valuable skill set that I think they might miss a little bit. Clint Hurdle mentioned trying to get Archimedes Caminero, the flame-throwing right-hander, to replace Hughes, which then, you know, somebody has to step up and take his spot. So I think that's going to be something to watch, if only because that was supposed to be this team's biggest strength for shortening games.
And Archimedes Caminero, I think, might be one of my top five names in baseball that I get to pronounce this year. So I'm rooting for him to get a lot of playing time, you know, get in there as frequently as possible. That's just a fun name to say. One other name you said, which Pirates fans are loving hearing this spring because he's had such a breakout spring, is Juan Nicasio. Like you said, he was kind of a pickup to be a long relief guy. Next thing you know, just lights out during the spring. He's in the rotation, and that kind of leads us to our second point. Is he the guy that you think is poised to really have a breakout season more than anyone else on the roster based on what he's done this past month?
I would say so in a way. You know, Juan Nicasio is a guy that some people are familiar with. It would be more of that classic reclamation season than maybe necessarily a breakout or breakthrough or anything like that. I think the true breakthrough guy that people in Pittsburgh are looking at is Gregory Polanco. It's just about time, some people would say, for him to turn that prospect hype and potential into production. And he showed some things during the middle of last season that proved that maybe he's capable of doing that. He struggled early. He got some things in order. He got his confidence back. And then just as he was really getting into a groove, he got a little banged up with his left knee toward the end of last season in September. So I think if they can get Polanco into, you know, sort of living up to that potential, or even just more so on the right track, you know, you've sort of seen it with Starlin Marte's development. If they can get him into that player that he was from, say, June to August last season, that outfield is a whole lot more dangerous. Their lineup is a lot deeper. And I think Polanco is sort of the guy you would look to as, say, poised for a breakout.
Yeah, one third of what could be baseball's most dynamic outfield in 2016, along with Andrew McCutchen and Starling Marte, something else we'll touch on in a few minutes. But going back to spring training observations here, Adam, you touched on some uncertainty in the bullpen, uncertainty at the back end of the bench. Do those kind of qualify for you, or is it something else in terms of the biggest unknown for this Pirates team heading into the early stages of 2016? Biggest unknown, biggest X factor right now, what do you think?
I'd say the biggest unknown is actually probably the back end of that rotation. It's going to look a little different with Nicasio there. You know, you're banking on his spring training results and the Ray Searidge magic and hoping that you can turn him into some sort of number three, number four, mid-rotation type starter. Jeff Locke has been inconsistent his entire career. If he can, you know, spin one of his first halves into a full season, they'll be in good shape. And then what does John Neese bring over the course of a full season? You know, is he a number three starter? Can he adequately sort of bridge that gap from Garrett Cole and Francisco Liriano to, you know, Locke and Nicasio? Can he be better? Can he be better than his career numbers? There's a lot of questions that come along with the rotation, even though it does seem like with Nicasio's success, they've shored some things up there.
Yeah, Nicasio and Neese can really step up and bring it here in 2016 to pair them, like you said, with Cole and Liriano. That's a dynamic rotation for the Pirates. But as you said, a lot of uncertainty there. We'll see how that certainly plays out. And, Adam, you mentioned that Gregory Polanco, it's time for him to kind of shed that, you know, the label of promise and potential and turn it into production, consistent production at the minor league level. But going back to the minor leagues, give me a prospect, maybe two, that could get called up to the big show, the big, you know, to the big leagues before the All-Star break. Who's kind of down there in Double-A or Triple-A that's really knocking on the door?
Yeah, it's a pretty easy one, and I feel like I've probably only said their names together this spring. Tyler Glasnow and Jameson Taillon, two pretty highly regarded pitching prospects in different stages, maybe, of their prospect hype. Taillon is kind of post-hype at this point. He was a number two overall draft pick, really, you know, heralded coming out of high school. And had some injuries that kind of affected him a little bit, the Tommy John surgery, the hernia operation. But he's coming back, and all that he really needs to show the Pirates is that he can handle upper-level hitters in AAA. Glasnow is probably the hotter prospect right now, has maybe the higher ceiling with his high-octane fastball, the curveball that moves like crazy, really just looks like a number one starter when you look at him. So he's got to prove that he can be a little more consistent with his fastball location and his delivery. He's got to get a third pitch, probably a changeup, but he's going to throw a lot. Triple-A, Neil Huntington likes to say that he's doing hitters a favor when he throws it right now. They don't want that to be the case when he comes to the majors. But I think by June, July, if there's any trouble with that back into the rotation, you're going to hear a lot of rumors about those guys coming up to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, if either one of them can turn into anything resembling Garrett Cole, the undisputed ace of this rotation, the rest of the NL Central, and the rest of baseball, better take notice, because those could be two huge additions to this Pirates rotation. Might be a little ways off, but we'll see what happens. It's a long, crazy season, and they could certainly be wearing the Pirates uniforms before the end of the season. Adam, you gave us three bold season predictions for the Pirates, so let's kind of run those down. The first one is regarding the Pirates' postseason fate. They've been a postseason mainstay for the past couple of seasons now, but what will change for the Pirates in 2016?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go out on a little bit of a low, steady limb and say that they're going to wind up back in the wild card game where they've been each of the last three seasons. And I'm going to say that they're going to host it yet again at PNC Park in front of the big blackout crowd going crazy on the North Shore. But I think the difference is, unlike the last 2 years, this time they're going to come out on top and get themselves back in a five-game National League Division Series, I think. You know, they've just run into absolute buzzsaws the last 2 years with Madison Bumgarner and Jake Arrieta, and I think this year they very well could have that buzzsaw on Garrett Cole, who you have to consider up there with some of the top arms in the National League, if not all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say that hopefully this year the buzzsaw is wearing a Pirates uniform, not facing a Pirates lineup. So as good as Bumgarner and Arrieta have been the last 2 years, hopefully this year, if they are in that dreaded wild card game, Garrett Cole is the guy that pitches 7-8 lights-out innings, gets them into the LDS. We'll certainly see. Full prediction number two, Adam. We talked about this a little bit beforehand regarding Gregory Polanco, but in terms of the other two members of that outfield, do you project some very big things ahead for them?
Yeah, I think Andrew McCutchen, he's been so healthy this spring. He's just been crushing the ball, hitting homers, pulling balls that he couldn't. Last spring when he was dealing with that knee injury. And I think this year he gets right back into the top three conversation when it comes to the National League MVP. I mean, he was still top five last year, which is pretty incredible when you look at the April numbers that just were not up to his career norms. But I think his individual success along with the Pirates' team success is going to propel him back into that top three. Who knows? He could even win if the Pirates have a good enough season and he's responsible for that, which odds are if they have a good season, he probably will be responsible for most of it. And then the other one is Starling Marte. I think this is another breakthrough-type season for him. I think he could take another step forward and not quite at that McCutcheon level, although if you factor in his defense, some advanced metrics would argue that he already is there. But I think he has the potential to take it even a little bit further, show more power, more speed, and just sort of start to get more national recognition, I guess, would be the way to put that. Perhaps an all-star bid or something like that for Starling Marte.
And going back and looking at the Cardinals' recent history the past 15, 16 years, it's really staggering. They've made the postseason 12 of the last 16 years, 6 of the last 7, and the last 5 in a row. Even though the Cardinals do have this reputation for being one of the most successful franchises in all of sports, do you think that sometimes gets a little bit overlooked still?
Yeah, you know what, Matt, from all I've read, the Cubs, I think, already have this automatic
postseason berth. That's right.
So they're in. So I guess there's 4 more spots to play with. But no, you're right. I mean, the sustained success of this Cardinals organization has been remarkable. And I think it's one of the reasons why, amid all this talk about the Cubs, you can never count the Cardinals out. They always find a way to be in it. They find a way mid-season to make the moves they need to make, whether it's calling up players from their seemingly never-ending, you know, supply in the farm system or going out and making deals. They find a way to win. So I think this sets up to be another exciting season. And again, I'm not going to count against them, not until there's kind of proof to do so.
Yeah, and like we've discussed in previous podcasts, it's amazing that a team that won 100 games is entering the season not as an underdog, but not also as a favorite, because like you said, it's been all Cubs, 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 you know, for the past 6 months, but never, ever count out this Cardinals team heading into 2016 especially. So, Jennifer, as spring training is winding down the last couple of days here before opening night on April 3rd, let's kind of get your observations based on what you've seen in spring training the past month plus. Usually by this point, roster spots and rotation spots are pretty much solidified, but is there one area on this team that is not quite solid just yet? It's a little bit soft in terms of a player that doesn't quite have a complete lockdown of his position, whether either a position spot or in the rotation right now.
Yeah, I mean, the roster is fairly set, and you know, and that came about kind of in an unexpected way on Thursday when Ruben Tejada hobbled off the field with a quad strain and, in essence, opened up a roster spot for Jeremy Haselbaker, an outfielder who had a sensational spring. We talked about him a couple weeks ago on the podcast, kind of the surprise candidate in camp, Greg Garcia earning that other bench spot. But I think now what's unclear is, even though we know the 25 that are going to be on the roster opening day, what's going to happen at that shortstop position? I mean, the Cardinals are essentially where they were 2 weeks ago when they were without Johnny Peralta, kind of the reality that he won't be back until at least June or July. They went out and signed Ruben Tejada thinking that he could provide that coverage at short. Now he is out for the foreseeable future. We don't know exactly how long just yet. So how much do they have to turn over to Jed Jerko, a guy who they had hoped to maybe use more as a utility infielder at multiple positions, a guy who only has 28 career starts at shortstop at the major league level? And then how does Greg Garcia fit into there as well? He did come up through the system as a shortstop, but isn't necessarily so proven at the major league level. So kind of the players are fit, but I think there is still some ambiguity in terms of roles.
Yeah, there is a weird voodoo hex on that shortstop position right now for this Cardinals team. As you said, Peralta first, now Tejada, and that is a big, big question mark for the Cardinals heading into the regular season for sure. Jennifer, you touched on Jeremy Haselbaker, a great story. 28 years old, career minor leaguer, makes the opening day roster. Fantastic for him. That kind of leads us to our second topic. Is he the guy, or is it perhaps someone else that is most likely to have a breakout season at the big league level in 2016?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how much playing time Jeremy gets. I mean, he obviously got a lot in spring, but that's not unusual, as a lot of your everyday players only play every other day, play half the game, this and that. So he got some great exposure. That being said, it's hard to see exactly how he's going to fit outside of a bench role on this major league club. And also, you know, kind of the length of time that Ruben Tejada is out could also dictate how long he actually stays on the major league roster. But, you know, for me, when I kind of scan this roster and envision who could have a breakout season, I think you stay in the outfield, but I think it's got to be Stephen Piscotty and Randall Grichuk, two guys, young players, guys who are not everyday starters at the major league just a year ago. Now both getting an opportunity. I think Stephen Piscotty's going to fit in that two-hole. I wouldn't be surprised if Randall Grichuk becomes your cleanup hitter. So when you talk about an offense kind of needing a boost, those two young players who the Cardinals hope could be faces of this franchise moving forward could have a breakout year. So I'm excited to see what both those guys can do with 550, 600 plate appearances. Again, it would be the first kind of full, hopefully healthy season for both of the majors.
Yeah, Piscotty and Grichuk could very well become the faces of this new wave of young Cardinals players who could take the franchise into this next era of success, and they certainly have the potential to pull that off, no question there. Jennifer, to backtrack a little bit, you talked about the uncertainty at the shortstop position right now. Is there another unknown or another X factor on this team that gives you a little bit of cause for concern?
Cause for concern, but I think the other unknown is first base. When kind of spring training opened 7 weeks ago, we knew that Matt Holliday had experimented at the position throughout the winter, but the Cardinals had kind of couched that as something that Matt wanted to do personally, maybe for the longevity of his career down the road. Now all of a sudden here we are, right on the precipice of the season opening, and he might be your opening day first baseman. So how are the Cardinals going to kind of navigate that new versatility? How much is Matt going to play at first base? What does that mean for a Matt Adams and a Brandon Moss, the two guys who we thought were going to kind of be the timeshare at first base? What does that mean for Tommy Pham? Does he get more exposure in the outfield? So it's great to certainly have the flexibility that the Cardinals do have now that Matt can play a second position, but it does kind of bring a little bit of an unknown. And, so many people want to know what the lineup is going to look like and what's the lineup going to be. I think this lineup is going to be so fluid because I think day-to-day we're going to see a different starting eight very regularly on the field because of all the flexibility that they have.
Yeah, a lot of variables in this lineup for Mike Matheny to play with as the season goes on. And Jennifer, to wrap up this portion of kind of our projections and predictions for 2016, you saw a lot of minor league players at Cardinals camp the past month plus wearing all the crazy jersey numbers in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So give me one prospect, maybe two, that we could see get called up to the major league level before the All-Star break.
Yeah, I think I'll start with Aledmys Diaz, and he's kind of the obvious choice now that we're talking about the Cardinals shortstop attrition. He is the young shortstop, now 2 years into his career here with the Cardinals. Had a very strong spring. The Cardinals sent him down in mid-May right after they had signed Ruben Tejada, thinking that they had filled that shortstop hole, but also wanting Diaz to get a little more exposure at AAA. This is a guy who had a very good season in AA, was moved up to AAA the very end of last year, only has 14 games there, followed that with a kind of a breakout period in the Arizona Fall League. But a little bit more exposure for him, if his offensive game can kind of catch up with him defensively, and couple that with the fact that the Cardinals still may have some questions at the shortstop position for a couple months going into the season, he's a guy to keep an eye on and somebody that Cardinals may turn to if things aren't working out with Jed Jerko and or if Ruben Tejada is out longer than expected.
Yeah, stranger things have happened. The young guy could get his shot before he expects it, before anyone expects it. We'll see how that plays out, certainly. Jennifer, now for your bold predictions for the 2016 season, and these are indeed bold. Let's start off here in the power department. No Cardinals player, somewhat surprisingly, has had a 30-homer season for this team since Carlos Beltran back in 2012. But who, in your eyes, is going to end that drought this season?
It's interesting because this team has several candidates for a change. That kind of indicates the lack of power that this team has generated the last several years. But I would point to Randall Grichuk as a guy. We talked about him as a breakout candidate for this team. He is a guy who hit 17 home runs last year, the same amount as Johnny Peralta, and almost half as many at bats. So this is a guy with scary power. When you look at his Statcast numbers, the exit velocity, he is right up there with the Giancarlo Stanton of baseball. So this is a guy with natural power potential. Again, the fact that he's going to get everyday playing time, as long as he can stay healthy, which has always been an asterisk in his career, and we saw it last year, a couple weight room incidents that took him off the field for periods of time. But if he can stay healthy, I think we're going to see a power surge from Grichuk. And then in a more general sense, I just think this team is going to hit more home runs than we've seen the last few years. When you have a healthy Matt Holliday back in the lineup, you have Matt Carpenter back, who led this team with 28 homers a year ago, and Matt Adams and Brandon Moss in there as well. I do think we'll see a little bit more power, but I expect a big season from Randall Grichuk.
Carrie, the baseball world still buzzing about that home run from John Lester, of all people. Opposite field shot, no less. And I got to think that for everything you've observed in Cubs spring training this season, that's got to be the most shocking moment to see Lester go deep, was it not?
Well, no, I think having baby bear cubs was a little more shocking. I wasn't quite prepared for that, but Lester really has a good swing, so I wouldn't be surprised if he gets his share of hits this year. So I think kind of the fun thing was for John, because afterwards he could just sort of relax and joke about it. But give him credit, the guy hasn't hit since high school, so pretty good. He had to relearn.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking about a guy that I believe set the major league record for futility with most at-bats to begin a career without a hit, something we talked about a few podcasts ago. And, of course, the guy that he got that first hit off of, who else but John Lackey? So that made the story even sweeter. And we'll see if Lester can put one over the fence here in the regular season in 2016. And to that end, let's tie up some spring training issues before we get to some of your bold predictions for this Cubs team in 2016. As Kerry, obviously there's a lot to like about the 2016 version of the Cubs. So many people are picking them to not only win the pennant, but to win it all for the first time since 1908. A lot of strengths on this team, but what in your eyes is the number one top slam dunk strength of the Cubs right now, do you believe?
Really, it's the pitching. If you look at the combination with, you know, they were pretty good last year. They finished third in the National League in ERA last season. Then you throw in John Lackey and also Jason Hamill sort of redone himself. Kyle Hendricks had a very quiet, very good spring training. So I really like their starting pitching.
And that says a lot, because I think the calling card of this team, at least in the fans' eyes, has got to be that lineup with all that thunder, all that power. But to have the pitching really be the standout strength of this team, that really does say something considering all the talent 1 through 25 on this roster. Kerry, from what you've observed in spring training, give me one guy that could, whether it's an established star that could take the leap to being a superstar, or somebody a little bit under the radar right now, somebody that could really break out in 2016.
Well, I'm really kind of curious to watch Addison Russell this year. I think this is going to be a really good season for him, mainly because he's so happy being at shortstop full time. He doesn't have to worry at all about the switch to second, which they tried to do last year. And he's also been really hitting the ball well this spring. He's shown a lot of power. And he's just, it's just such a big comfort level for him. He's a good match with Zobrist, who's been giving him a lot of help in terms of the infield play. And it's just a good combination. I'm very curious to see what numbers Russell finishes with at the end of the year. I mean, keep in mind, he had 13 homers and 54 RBI, and he was primarily batting ninth. And Joe has talked about how he's going to bump them up a little bit in the order. So let's see where that turns out.
Yeah, and still just 22 years old, an age when even the most
heralded
prospects are waiting to break into the major leagues, period. Here's this guy at 22 entering his second full big league season. So a big plus in his column. A lot of good things to expect from Addison Russell in 2016. Kerry, again, for all the strengths and all the positives of this team, what is perhaps the biggest unknown, the biggest uncertainty right now with this Cubs team?
Uncertainty. I think it's just kind of figuring out how Joe wants to do the lineup. That's going to be sort of interesting for us. He's, there's a lot of interesting pieces, and he's got a lot of choices. He's been kind of joking to us about how he can't figure out what to do with a Rizzo sandwich. He wants Zobrist and Chris Bryant to be batting around Rizzo. He just hasn't figured out who's going to be third and who's going to be fifth. You know, if it's going to be Zobrist, Rizzo, Bryant, or Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist, that kind of thing. And it's just little stuff like that. You know, it's kind of fun to watch, sort of fun to listen to Joe discuss all the options that he's got.
Yeah, so many variables and choices he can make. And as the saying goes, it's a quote-unquote good problem to have for Joe Maddon to mix and match that lineup. And what fun that's going to be for him to fill out that lineup card every single day. He's certainly going to be entertained by that. And, Kerry, you know, obviously this Cubs farm system in recent years has been at or near the top of the 30 major league clubs in baseball, like I said, for the past couple of years. A lot of those guys have graduated, obviously, to the big league level, but still some guys down at the AA and AAA level that have loads of talent. Could we see one or two prospects make their big league debut before the All-Star break for this team?
Well, I think in terms of the prospects doing that kind of thing, in terms of the debut, that probably won't happen until September. Like you said, you know, you've got Bryant and Russell and Schwarber. Those guys came up pretty fast. And the next level of talent in terms of debuts would probably not be until kids that are called up in September. The prospect that I would tell fans to keep an eye on is pitcher Carl Edwards Jr., who did get a real brief taste of the big leagues last year. He'll be at Triple-A, and he closed the game on Thursday here in Las Vegas. And he really pitched well. He's really matured in terms of a person. He's matured in terms of a pitcher. He's really adjusted well to this whole relief role, and I think that's kind of a guy to sort of keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I think a lot of fans sometimes fall into the trap of you know, you see these prospects get to the big league level and you automatically think, well, the farm system's been cleaned out. Not the case with the Cubs whatsoever. They still got a lot of talent down on the farm. And like you said, even if these guys may not debut until September call-ups, it is still something to look forward to in 2016 for what is already a very loaded Chicago Cubs team. Kerry, right now, let's get to three bold predictions you have for this Cubs roster in 2016. And the first one involving a member of the rotation that will drastically improve upon his sub-500 record from last year. And who's that going to be?
In terms of a sub-500 record, well, I like Jason Hammel. I think Jason Hamill's really going to – I can't remember his record right off the top of my head. Sorry, it's a little crazy around here right now. I really think Hamill redid himself this offseason, and I'm really anxious to see what he does during the regular season. He just changed everything about himself, you know, changed his diet, changed his mental attitude, changed his physical attitude. He's just been in a really good place, and I that's a guy I'm hoping for good things from.
Yeah, for him to put together two solid halves in 2016 would be a huge boost for that Cubs rotation. A guy I was kind of leaning towards, John Lester. I think we've discussed in past podcasts.
No problem at all. We're in Vegas, all right? There's some weird people walking by, you know, in pirate outfits and things like that. So it's hard to stay focused here.
Hey, I understand completely. But, again, as you've discussed in the past, you know, Lester – definitely had his ups and downs in 2015, but now he's really settled in, you know, second full year with Chicago. He's got more of a comfort level, and he's got his bromance buddy, as we've talked about, John Lackey. So I think if there's a guy that could really make a leap, it's got to be John Lester.
Yeah, no, I would agree. But I guess I don't think that he had – the record might not have been a winning record, but I don't think he did that poorly last year. I just think, you know, it's just a matter of how you look at the numbers.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was one game below 500, but that's such an antiquated stat these days. Wins and losses, the ERA solid, but every reason to think that he could get back to his levels that he was with the Red Sox for all those years, and maybe earning a third ring as hopefully ending that drought with the Cubs here in 2016. Kerry, another bold prediction, a free agent who returned to the Cubs, you think is going to have a bigger impact than maybe most people anticipate. Who do you think that's going to be?
Oh, Lackey, absolutely. But you said return to the Cubs.
Well, true. I was thinking more of a position player and outfielder that returned that had something of a surprising return.
Dexter Fowler. I'm sorry. I sent those notes so long ago. It's Vegas, baby. I mean, there's just so much stuff going on right now at this ballpark. Dexter Fowler, Joe Mann had the coolest line about Dexter Fowler the other day, where he said that Madden said he felt good about the team, but when Fowler came back, he said everything felt right. And I just thought that was just one of the neatest lines about somebody. It just shows how much Fowler really meant to the team last year, and that now with Fowler back, that it just all the pieces are in place okay, they were, you know, they were considering forcing Hayward to be the leadoff guy. Now they're much happier having Hayward in the number two spot. Fowler will lead off. It's just made such a difference in terms of the player's attitude and the vibe that I really think Dexter's going to really be a key person here.
Mark, we were just discussing a moment or two ago that this is your last day in Arizona, and I asked you if that was a good thing or a bad thing. The weather, obviously, you're loving, but I think you're ready to get home, correct?
Absolutely. I love Arizona. I've been very happy with the 7 years that the Reds have been out here. The spring training is a great place to be, but I think anywhere away from your house for 6-7 weeks is too long as far as you just miss being home, and I'm more than eager to sleep in my own bed starting tomorrow.
Yeah, no place like home. As great as spring training is, and the weather and the sunshine and the blue skies, again, no place like home. So the end of the tunnel is near as the regular season approaches this coming Sunday night. And, Mark, the theme of today's podcast is we're going to look at predictions for the Reds in 2016, more towards the end of our segment. But to begin, just some of your observations based on what you've seen in spring training, again, as that is winding down here in the next couple hours, couple days. So let's start here. In terms of a rotation or position battle with this Reds team that is still kind of somewhat simmering heading into the early part of the season, where on the diamond, where on the roster would that be right now for this club?
I would be the rotation. What's funny is that when they start the season, they're going to have 5 starting pitchers on the disabled list, and they could have an entire rotation, almost their projected rotation, on the disabled list when they open. And that's kind of an odd one. And that's going to be an area that's going to be in flux a lot because you got, you know, Homer Bailey's going to be back in May. You got John Lamb who's going to be back at the end of April. Michael Lorenzen, when he solves his elbow troubles, can slot in whenever he's ready. Anthony DeSclafani, who was going to possibly be the opening day starter, has an oblique issue. He'll probably slot into the rotation in the 5th spot on April 10th, but he can still backdate it, be on the DL. John Moscott has an intercostal issue. He could be ready by mid-April. So that's where the most flux will happen. The guys that are pitching in the rotation now, I think only Raisel Iglesias is assured, I think, in my mind, as long as he keeps pitching well and he's the opening day starter. I could see him making all the starts throughout the season, and then I really don't know about the other 4. Anything could happen at this point.
Yeah, a lot of aches and pains in that Reds rotation, as you just elaborated on. But when those guys get healthy, certainly a lot to look forward to in the early part of 2016. Mark, again, based on what you've seen, you know, every year in spring training with every team, you've got your spring training all-stars and MVPs and Hall of Famers, and it's tough to say, you know, what's going to stick and what isn't going to stick. But based on what you've seen, which player that perhaps may not be on the radar right now could have a breakout season?
I think Reds fans are familiar with him from last season, but I don't think he's got a lot of baseball-wide exposure. Is Eugenio Suarez, who's now their third baseman. He was a shortstop last year. He filled in very well for Zach Cozart. Was kind of surprising offensively, and what he's done this spring is really just back that up with a nice spring at the plate. And he's also played better than advertised defense at third base. And I think they're pretty pleased with him. You know, I don't know if he'll be able to, you know, reach the levels of Todd Frazier that he established before he got traded, but I think he'll be at least a good guy to have in that spot. And I think he might do some good things from the second spot in the order, if that's exactly where they end up putting him. But I think he'll be kind of a breakout guy. I also think on the pitching side, Raisel Iglesias will be a breakout sensation this year. You know, we didn't see a whole lot of him in spring training, but I just think that based on what he did last year, having a year of experience under his belt, having his shoulder worked on so that's more flexible and enabling him to do more things, I think he could be in line for a breakout season as well.
So two guys there in Suarez that you touched on first that could have breakout seasons for the Reds here in 2016. And like you said, big shoes to fill there with Todd Frazier, but this Reds team, as we've touched on in numerous podcasts, clearly rebuilding a lot of young talent. Suarez may be at the forefront of that. Mark, something you kind of touched on already a little bit, but in terms of the biggest unknown heading into 2016, yes, you mentioned all the injuries in the rotation, specifically with guys like Homer Bailey, Anthony DeSclafani, but is there another aspect of this team, perhaps, with the lineup that you're not quite sure what you're going to get positively or negatively heading into a new season?
I think the bullpen is really an area of concern, quite frankly. It's not many of those guys have looked very good in camp. J.J. Hoover was the one known entity going in as likely the closer. He is now the closer. They're going to have 8 relievers to open the season, and I could say that I don't exactly know what's going to come up with the 7 other guys. Tony Cingrani probably had the second best or the better spring of those guys. But after that, it's tough, and I think that's going to be with the rotation in flux and a lot of young guys. I think the rotation's going to be used a lot, or the bullpen's going to be used a lot this year, and what they end up providing, who knows.
Now, in terms of J.J. Hoover, it was a couple of weeks ago that Brian Price anointed him as the closer, the guy to fill in, or to take over, I should say, for Aroldis Chapman here in 2016. Is he going to be a guy that the Reds are going to sink or swim with no matter what? Or is it kind of a basis where if he falters, they could dip into that reserve core of the 6 or 7 other guys you mentioned? What's kind of the outlook for Hoover right now?
Well, he certainly established himself in there. I mean, I think with anything, they give a guy the chance until they can't do it. And I don't think they'll ever back themselves into a corner saying that this is the guy no matter what. I mean, obviously, if he goes out and just can't get a save or can't lock down innings, you know, the 9th inning, they may look elsewhere. And I think that's an area where someone like Michael Lorenzen could be valuable when he's ready is if he – they don't get him stretched out in time to start, or they like him better in a later role. He's got a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. He can do a lot of things. He's a power pitcher. He's got multiple pitches, and he's fearless. And I think he's somebody that they could possibly look at down the road. You know, Brandon Flanagan, who they're very happy with having the rotation, they want him to be a starter, short and long term. He obviously has the credentials as a reliever, and he's done it in the major leagues for the Royals. So I think he's someone else they could look to if he doesn't stay in the rotation.
And Mark, of course, this Reds team stocked up on prospects over the winter with the trades they made of their established veterans. So a lot of guys down in the minor league levels who are just waiting, knocking out the door to get called up to the big leagues, make a contribution at the major league level in 2016. So to that end, give me one, maybe two, but at least one minor league prospect in this Red system that we could see get called up before the All-Star break.
Again, with the rotation being in flux, Cody Reed, definitely that guy. He's actually going to be coming over from minor league camp to finish the Cactus League schedule. He's pitching today, starting against the Indians, but he was the most impressive prospect I think we all saw in camp this year. He showed if he's not ready, he's extremely close. Brian Price thinks he's close. They want him to develop his changeup a little more, but they really think his fastball and slider are major league ready, and they think his personality and his ability to be ready for the major leagues is pretty much there. So I think it's only a matter of time. It's kind of happened quick. One of the reasons they did send him down, besides to work on his changeup, is that he did only have 13 AA starts, and they don't feel like the AAA getting some time there would hurt him, and it can only help him. So I think he's one of those guys that when they call him up, they want it to be for good, and I would not be shocked if he's up before the All-Star break.
So, Mark, to wrap things up in the final few minutes we have left, the portion of the podcast where we can, give our bold predictions for 2016 and then 6 months down the road, look back and laugh at ourselves, because that's the nature of baseball. We rarely get these right, but that's part of the charm of the sport, of course. So let's start here with a guy, and I don't think this will shock anybody, but again, for a team that is rebuilding, a team that struggled last year, there is a guy in this lineup you think is going to be a bona fide, legit MVP candidate in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Votto, last year when they only won 64 games and really were going down the drain in the second half, he only got better, and you can certainly make the argument that teams can pitch around him more, but I'll counter the argument that he's already experienced that last year and still found ways to have really one of the more exceptional second halves in recent history. So I look for him to have a big year. He's had a great camp. He's been healthy. He's dialed in at the plate, which is not usually the case for him in spring training. He's hitting over 400 this spring, and he just looked very good. So I see him just making the adjustments and learning how to beat pitchers. He's not going to have a bad lineup around him. I mean, if Devin Mesoraco is hitting behind him, or Suarez or Bruce or one of those guys, I think, or Duvall, he has a chance to do some things, and I think he's going to have a great year.
Adam, the theme of today's podcast is bold predictions for the Brew Crew for the 2016 season. Before we get to those, let's do kind of a spring training wrap-up here and project what we're going to see or not see from this Brewers team in 2016 based on your spring training observations. So, Adam, let's start here. Give me what, in your mind, could be the most intriguing rotation or position battle that is still kind of somewhat simmering at this point. Most clubs do have their positions locked down and their rotation locked down, but is there at least one area of relative uncertainty for this Brewers team heading into the first month of the season?
Not relative uncertainty, Matt. As we talk, we're exactly 3 days from opening day, and your guess is as good as mine and anybody else's about who's going to play center field on opening day for the Brewers. I can't remember a year covering this team where we didn't know who was going to be in the starting lineup, and that's the case. They've still got three players vying for two spots as we speak. They've got Ramon Flores already on the team, but uncertain what exactly his role will be. Craig Counsell says this will probably be unsettled into the season. They're going to give guys a shot out there, see who grabs it. It's a position of huge uncertainty, and really still, like I said, anyone's guess who's gonna man that position.
Yeah, it could be anybody's guess, like you said, come opening day, who's going to trot out there into center field and maybe...
Including someone, Matt, from outside the organization.
Sure.
And that's true of the final bullpen spot on this team as well. They've got competitors in camp for the bullpen. It's two guys for one spot. But look, they're looking at other clubs. A few years ago, 2011, they picked up Niger Morgan in the last week of camp. He ended up having a huge impact on a really good Brewers team. This team is going to be different than that one in terms of wins and losses, but still it's the same thought that they're looking at other clubs' cuts, last-minute cuts, and it's probably 50-50 in terms of whether it's going to be someone in-house that fills those two jobs or whether they go outside the organization. So tremendous uncertainty, and again, it's going to continue into April for sure and perhaps beyond. This is going to be a team of opportunity.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it, and flip a coin at this point as to who could man certain positions, who could get certain spots at the back end of that bullpen. So still a lot of uncertainty, a lot still up in the air for the Brewers here at the onset of the 2016 season. Adam, shifting gears a little bit based on what you've seen in spring training, give me one player, maybe two, that is poised to have a breakout season this year.
Well, I have seen enough spring trainings to know that if you're basing this on spring training statistics, you're going to be even more wrong than usual because all these predictions are going to be wrong anyway. But if you base it off spring statistics, it's going to be extra wrong. I'll tell you, though, there's a couple of players who did look good in camp. And one of them, maybe we'll talk about later, Chris Carter, really struck the ball well throughout spring training. A shorter swing than you'd expect. He looked pretty good, and I'm very interested to see what he does with this season. On the pitching side, Jimmy Nelson, who's coming out of the gates as the Brewers' number two starter, had a strong spring. He really wants to incorporate the changeup this year. Last year, a focus was on the curveball. This year, it's on a changeup, a pitch he used before in college and even in the minor leagues, but got away from in the big leagues where you're kind of fighting for survival as you're trying to break into the bigs. Now he wants to establish that as a pitcher, would make him a true four-pitch pitcher, and a guy I think to keep an eye on this year. Willie Peralta is their opening day starter, but he's a guy he's into arbitration now. This is a rebuilding team. I think Willie Peralta is actually a pretty strong trade candidate at some point. And Jimmy Nelson has an opportunity to kind of establish himself as the guy they build around a little bit more. So those are a one hitter and one pitcher that I'm very curious to see as the regular season starts to unfold and we move past the meaningless spring training performances and get into the ones that actually matter.
Yeah, now it counts. And like you said, we've seen a multitude of spring training Hall of Famers in recent years, and it doesn't always translate to when the games actually matter. But hopefully for the Brewers, these guys that did have strong springs, it will carry over to when the games count, to when the W's and the L's matter. So we'll see as 2016 unfolds. Adam, you touched on the uncertainty with the center field position and with the back end of that bullpen, but perhaps from a team perspective, in terms of the makeup of this team, what is the biggest unknown or the biggest X factor facing this Brewers team heading into a new season?
Well, look, positionally, like I said, it's center field because that is just so wide open and it's so unlike any other team I've covered, again, as you're on the cusp of opening day and you just literally don't know who's going to play a position is weird. But X factor to me, if we think about it more broadly, I wrote about this in the week leading up to camp. Jonathan Lucroy has so many unknowns going into this year. He is obviously on the trading block. That has been, we've talked about it on this podcast. It's been written about at length, his future with the team. But even take that aside, just from a pure baseball standpoint, this was a guy who was fourth in the MVP balloting in 2014 in the National League, established himself really up there as one of the elite offensive and all around really catchers in baseball, and really fell off last year with two fluke injuries, a foul ball off his foot and was out with a broken toe, and then a concussion late in the season. And it wasn't, you know, wear and tear type injuries. It was fluke things. So he's got an opportunity to really bounce back. But with everything going on around him, the rebuild, his distaste with going through that process, then sort of coming to terms with it and trying to be a leader on this team, there is just so many unknowns. And I think this season could go in so many different directions for him. He's a critical player with all the tearing down that they've done around him of established players. All the the unestablished guys are going to go through way more ups and downs. They are very much counting on Jonathan Lucroy and Ryan Braun to anchor the offense for the time that Lucroy is here. So a huge X factor for me.
And Adam, that is a perfect segue into the bold prediction segments of the podcast. You have three of those. So let's stick with Lucroy here. As you said, he's one of the last veterans remaining on this Brewers team as the rebuild is in full swing now. But you still think that before the end of the season, if things shake out right or wrong, depending upon your perspective, he could be shipped off to a team that is expected to be a major contender in the National League, if you want to elaborate on that.
Well, yeah, I think the Washington Nationals are a good fit for Jonathan Lucroy, and I'm not breaking any news by mentioning them as a suitor. There have been talks. Washington is certainly one of the teams that's interested. Hasn't gone anywhere. The Brewers are asking for a haul for their catcher. They are valuing him at the fourth in NL MVP balloting, 2014, Jonathan Lucroy, when he led the majors in doubles. Other teams see him as, maybe more of a question mark. They're not willing to part with the sort of package of players the Brewers are apparently looking for. So, look, the Rangers are in play for him. I think the D-backs would be a good fit as well if they wanted to upgrade. But I just threw a dart and picked the Washington Nationals. And I think this happens this season. We've talked about this, too. The contract for Lucroy, he's actually under club control through the end of next season. And for the 2 years, it's only $9.25 million, which is a pretty good price when you consider what other players are making for the level of production he's capable of. But if the Brewers want to get this huge package for him, which I know they do, you figure they're going to want to do it this year where there is still that next season on that contract. They can sell that to another club. Another club is going to be far more willing to give up with some premium prospects if they're going to get more than just a few months of Jonathan Lucroy. So I'm betting that this thing happens before the trade deadline. And I'm going to go out on a limb and pick the Washington Nationals as his destination.
Yeah, a healthy, productive Lucroy could bring back quite a haul for this Milwaukee team, as you said, especially with that second year remaining on the contract. It makes him even that much more appealing and attractive to teams in the mix for the National League pennant this year. And Washington, at least on paper, could be an ideal landing spot for him. We'll see how that plays out. Adam, your second bold prediction is that a guy we already mentioned earlier in this podcast could hit, in your mind, maybe, if not more than 40 homers, approach it. Who could that player be?
Well, it's Chris Carter. And look, this assignment from our editors was to make a bold prediction. And I saw my colleagues' choices. And I got to say, I won this assignment hands down. Because these other guys, they went so safe. And they're picking, playoff appearances for teams that are obviously vying for that. I went way out on a limb and picked 40 homers for a guy who hit 199 last week. So,
bold
look,
indeed.
Do I think it's going to happen? I don't know. Who knows? All of these predictions in baseball, we are always wrong. These seasons never play out the way we predict them to. I'll just say that this is a guy who hit 39 once in the minor. He hit 37 in Houston a couple of years ago. He's going to a great hitter's park in Miller Park where they feel like his oppo power is going to play. Obviously, he's a good pole hitter, too. The ball flies out to left, but it also goes out to right center. He's got some power, and maybe at Minute Maid, those balls would die out near the hill. I just think it's he looks good in these spring training games. And Ryan Braun said he also looks good in batting practice. And Ryan Braun was surprised at he expected this big long swing from a typical power hitter swing. And what Ryan Braun saw, particularly in the BPs, was this compact, easily repeatable stroke that Ryan Braun says he's surprised when he looks at the batting averages over Chris Carter's career and sees them as low as they are. So he's on board with a big season for this guy. He doesn't have any prospects pushing him. This is Chris Carter's job. And I just think that the ingredients are there for, if not 40 home runs, a productive first season in Milwaukee. But what the heck? Let's go way out on a limb and say he's going to hit 40.